Welcome back to the show, Chef. Have you ever walked into your kitchen and felt it before you could name it? Service is running, tickets are moving, food's going out, and yet something still feels off. The energy's weird, the team's a little guarded, the rhythm feels broken in a way you can't quite put your finger on. Have you ever felt the tightening in your chest when you know something needs to be said, but you don't say it? When you convince yourself that one more shift, one more day, one more chance will smooth it all out on its own. What if that feeling isn't noise? What if that discomfort you keep pushing past is actually the most important information in the room? And here's the bigger question. What if the hardest part of leadership isn't the 90-hour weeks, the staffing crisis, or the back-to-back services that nearly break you? What if the hardest part is holding a standard when it would be so much easier just to let it go? Today, we're going to go deep on what it actually means to lead with love and hold the line. I'm going to walk you through a framework I use in the Successful Chef Bootcamp, one that chefs have used to turn around the culture of entire kitchens. And I'm going to tell you about a real coaching call that changed how I think about we owe each other as leaders. If you stick with me, you're going to leave today with a clear framework you can put to work this week, a story that might sound a little familiar, and a question that I think is worth sitting with for a while. And we'll get into all of that right after this message. Welcome to Chef Life Radio. I'm Chef Adam Lamb. This is a show for culinary leaders who are done pretending burnout is a badge of honor and ready to build kitchens people actually want to work in. Talent gets you noticed. Leadership gets you followed. Let's get into it. Quick pause. If this is landing and you want to work through it in real time with other chefs who are actually in it, that's what the Leadership Lab is for. It's not a course. It's not coaching theater. It's a room where we slow down things enough to tell the truth. It's every month, it's free to join, and you can register at thechefliferbrigade.com/the lab and the links in the show notes. All right, let's get into it. Walk into any kitchen long enough and you'll develop a radar. You'll feel the energy of a room before anyone opens their mouths. You'll know when something's off before a single ticket drops or a word gets said. That feeling, that's not anxiety. That's not you being paranoid or too sensitive or too in your head. That's your leadership radar going off. And if you've been at this for a while, you know that feeling isn't random. That discomfort, that's information. The problem isn't that you don't feel it. The problem is what most of us do with it. We hope. We hope it fixes itself. We hope they get the message. We hope one more conversation, one more shift, one more grace period will smooth it out. And I get it, because the alternative is uncomfortable. The alternative is a conversation you're not sure how to have. The alternative is risking the relationship, the vibe, the momentum you've worked so hard to build. But here's the thing about hope in that context. Hope that it'll fix itself, that they'll just get it on their own, that ain't a strategy. That's avoidance wearing a patient face. And there's a cost to it, because what you tolerate, you teach. Every single time you let something slide, every time you walk past a gap without naming it, you're sending a message to every person in that room, whether you meant to or not. And that message is, that standard is optional. Now, before I go any further, I want to be clear about something, because this isn't about blame and it isn't about you beating yourself up. We didn't end up here because we stopped caring. We got here because we cared deeply. We fell in love with the craft, with feeding people, with precision, with pride, with the feeling of getting it exactly right. And then we ran headfirst into a business that, for a long time, rewarded the ones that could absorb the most, who could endure the most, who could give the most without asking for anything back. So we learned to harden. We armored up to survive. And slowly, quietly, the heart that made us powerful became something we learned to protect instead of lead from. Here's the fracture that most chefs I work with don't have language for yet. The craft asks for presence. The business rewards endurance. And those two things pull in opposite directions. If nobody teaches you how to hold both at the same time, you end up believing that sacrificing yourself is just part of the job. That absorbing everything, the chaos, the gaps, the underperformance, is what love looks like in a kitchen. It isn't. That's conditioning. And it's worth naming for what it is. Here's a frame that reshapes everything for the chefs I coach. In every operation, there are two customers. There's the guest, the one sitting at table 12, celebrating an anniversary or birth date, or just a Tuesday that needed to feel like something. And then there's the internal customer, your team, the people standing next to you on the line, prepping beside you, carrying the mission with you every single shift. Both of them are owed something. Both of them have a seat at the table. But here's where it goes sideways for a lot of us. If you're wired as a people pleaser, if you're wired to smooth things over, to keep peace at all costs, to absorb the friction so nobody else has to feel it, you're probably over-indexing on one and under-indexing the other. Most chefs I know are deeply committed to the guest experience. They'll flex the menu, rewrite the prep list, jump on a station, take the hit, whatever it takes to make sure that the guest doesn't feel the chaos. And I respect that. That's what we do. But in doing that, we sometimes quietly ask our team to absorb it instead. We protect the guest experience at the expense of people delivering it. And we call that leadership. What it actually is love without boundaries. And love without boundaries always lands somewhere, usually on the people closest to you. I'll tell you what I used to do. I'd walk in, feel the tension, sense the drift, and then I'd get busy. I get so locked in on the tickets, on the food going out right, on making sure that the guests had no idea anything was off backstage, that I'd just paper over it, tell myself I'd deal with it after service. And after service, I was too tired. So it went on the list. And you know what that list does. That list is where things go to get forgotten. What I was actually communicating to my team without ever saying a word was, your experience here is less important than the guests. Your discomfort is less urgent than the reservation. And that message, absorbed over weeks and months, starts to feel like something much worse than that. It starts to feel like, I don't matter here. I'm just a means to an end. That's not the kitchen you're trying to build. And it's probably not the kitchen you got into this for. So let me ask you directly, what do you owe your team? What's the promise you're making implicitly every time you walk through that door? And have you said it out loud? Because if you haven't named it, you can't lead from it. And if you don't lead from it, you're just hoping things don't fall apart. This is where the leadership loop comes in. And it's one of the most practical frameworks I teach in the bootcamp. 4 steps. Step 1, identify the gap. What's off? What's not aligned with the standard you've set? With who you said you are and what you say you'll stand for. Step 2, name the why. Give it context. Why does this actually matter? How does it affect the guest? How does it affect the team? How does it affect the mission you said you were building together? And then you communicate that to them. Step 3, you embody the standard. Show what good looks like. Don't just talk about it, demonstrate it. Get on the station, model the behavior, make the standard visible, not just audible. And step 4, hold the line. Follow through every time. Not just when it's easy, not just when you're well rested, not just when the person crossing the line is someone you don't have history with. Now, the 3 steps, most chefs can do these in their sleep. You can see a problem, you can talk about it, you can even role model the shift. That's the part that feels like leadership. Step 4 is where most of us collapse. I want to tell you about a coaching call I had a few months back because I think it'll land better as a story than as a framework. She was a chef I'd been working with for about a year, running a mid-sized restaurant, solid reputation, a team she'd built from the ground up, sharp, talented, kind of leader her team would walk through the fire for. And she came to me knowing something was wrong. She'd felt it for weeks. One of her best cooks had started slipping, nothing dramatic, nothing that was going to blow up service, just the small things. The finishing touches getting lazy, the mise en place that used to be pristine now just getting by. She knew it, and every time she walked past the station, she felt the dip. But she didn't say anything, because this cook was one of her best, because they'd been through some rough stretches together, because she didn't want to seem ungrateful or controlling or like she was micromanaging someone who'd earned her trust. She told herself maybe the cook was just tired. Maybe it would come back. Maybe she was reading too much into it. So she let it slide. 1 week, then 2, then 3. And then she started noticing something else. The rest of her crew were watching. Not dramatically. There was no mutiny. No one was making speeches. They were just watching, calibrating, taking notes on what got addressed and what got a pass. And then one of her junior cooks came to her after service, quiet, respectful, and asked, "Chef, are we changing the standard on garnish?" And that was it. That was the whole thing. That one question, that careful, loaded, entirely fair question, was the whole team telling her everything they couldn't say out loud. Is this still who we are? Does this standard actually mean something? Are you still leading us, or are you just letting us go? She told me she went home that night and couldn't sleep. Not because the food had gotten bad, but because she realized that she'd been teaching the room for 3 weeks without ever opening her mouth. That the standard was negotiable. That her love for that cook looked from the outside exactly like letting everyone drift. This is how it happens. Not through blowups. Not through dramatic moments you can point to and say, that's where it all went wrong. Through tolerances, through the slow accumulation of things that didn't get named, through micro betrayals of the mission that happened one quiet shift at a time. Standards don't fall. Leaders stop holding them. There's a reason why chefs call it a brigade. It's not just about a chain of command. It's about shared sacrifice, mutual respect, and a code. You've got each other's backs because the work demands it, because the pressure demands it, because when it works, there's nothing else like it. And that means we owe each other something. We owe each other clarity, not hints, not vibes, not hoping someone reads between the lines. Clarity. We owe each other consistency, holding the same standard on a Tuesday in February that we hold on a Saturday in July. We owe each other dignity in how we communicate and how we correct, because the way you deliver feedback is part of the culture, not separate from it. And above all, we owe each other the courage to lead when it's hard, when it's lonely, when it'll be so much easier to say nothing and let it go for one more day. Think about what your silence communicates to someone who's starting to slip. They're watching you. They're wondering, did she notice? Did it matter to her? Is this actually okay? And when you don't say anything, they get their answer. Not the answer you meant to give, but the answer. And here's what makes it worse. It doesn't just affect them. It affects everybody watching. In a kitchen, everything is visible. The whole team is running the same calculation every shift, figuring out where the real lines are based on what gets addressed and what gets a pass. Your silence becomes their ceiling. And once that ceiling drops, it's a lot harder to raise than it ever was to hold. Here's a line I want you to sit with. Transparency is care. Directness is compassion. Because silence doesn't protect people, it abandons them. Every time you don't hold the line, you're not just avoiding a conflict, you're teaching the room what doesn't matter. And eventually, the people who care the most, the ones who came to you because they believed in the mission, start asking themselves whether they're in the right place. That chef I mentioned, she had the conversation. The next morning, before service, she pulled the cook aside. No drama, no speech, no write-up. Just, I've watched your work start to slip and I haven't said anything, and that's on me. I'm saying it now because I believe in what you can do, and I don't want to watch either of us settle for less than that. That was it. The cook got quiet, nodded, said, I needed that. She told me later it was the most scared she'd felt in months and almost the most like herself. That's what holding a line from love looks like. Not a blow up, not a performance. A clear, honest human moment that says, I see you, I believe in you, and I'm not going to pretend that this is okay just because naming it is uncomfortable. Love without boundaries becomes martyrdom. Standards without heart becomes control. Leadership is the integration of both. So here's what I want you to do this week. Pick one gap, one standard, one moment you've been avoiding. Not the biggest thing, not the conversation that will require restructuring your whole operation. Just one. Write it down and work the loop. What's the gap? Be specific. Not my team is sloppy. What station, what behavior, what exact moment? What does it matter? Connect it to the guest. Connect it to the team's dignity. Connect it to the mission you said you were building. What does that corrective behavior look like? Can you model it before you require it? And how will you hold the line with clarity and care when the moment comes? Then go do it. One loop, one standard, one clean act of integrity. And if you want to gut check where you're at, ask your crew, what do you think we stand for? The answer might surprise you, or they might remind you exactly what you've been fighting for all along. All right, let's hammer it home. Today, we talked about the signal, that feeling in your gut when something's off in your kitchen, and why hope is not a strategy for dealing with it. Talked about the unspoken contract you have with your two customers, the guest at table 12, and the person standing next to you on the line. And how love without boundaries doesn't protect your team, it abandons them. We walked through the leadership loop, identify the gap, name the why, embody the standard, and hold the line. We sat with the part that actually breaks most leaders. Step number 4. We heard from a chef who let a standard slip for 3 weeks, not because she didn't care, but because she cared so much, it scared her. And what finally happened when she finally named it. The work this week is simple. One gap, one loop, one honest conversation. That's it. Because if you can name it, you own it. And if you own it, you can change it. Big thanks to the culinary program at AB Technical College in Asheville, North Carolina, for the continued support of the show and their commitment to developing the next generation of culinary professionals here in Western North Carolina. If you're looking to build a career in this industry, or you're an operator looking to connect with an emerging talent, check them out, abtechnicalculinary.edu. And thanks to Carolina Health and Wellness for keeping us in the game. You know, I'm always saying it, kitchen will take everything you're willing to give it. Take care of the body that does the work. Carolina Health and Wellness gets that. The link is in the show notes. Until next time, stay tall, stay frosty, and lead from your heart. That's a wrap for today's episode of Chef Life Radio. If this resonated with you, do me a favor, subscribe, share, and leave a review. Your feedback helps us reach more culinary leaders like you who are ready to take their kitchens to the next level. Want more? Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or join our Chef Life Radio community for exclusive insights and leadership tools. Remember, leadership isn't about perfection, it's about progress. So take what you've learned today and apply it in your kitchen, your team, and your life. Chef Life Radio is more than just a podcast, it's a movement. The focus is no longer just on career survival, but on transforming leadership, creating sustainability, and ensuring chefs can build kitchens that thrive. Remember, the secret ingredient to culinary success isn't just in the food, it's in the leadership. Keep learning, keep growing, and as always, lead with the heart. See you next time.